Hi guys, I'm Danan Hanbali and this is Something to Consider. Today we're going to be speaking to two entrepreneurs that will share their insights and experiences in the world of culinary entrepreneurship. From selling just 10 meal kits to thousands weekly, their journey is nothing short of inspiring. However, that isn't the catch. Ahmed and Olivia aren't just the co-founders behind the meal kit service Hello Chef that has taken the UAE by storm, but they are also partners at home. They met in Bahrain while taking Arabic classes, fell in love, got married, started a beautiful family together, and figured, you know what? We'd probably rock one more thing. Ahmed and Olivia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
It's an honor to be here.
I'm really glad to have you guys here. I usually start out with a question to kind of set the tone for our audience that maybe don't know you guys. What context do we need to know about you both in terms of your backgrounds or just really the context of your lives to get a better idea of who you are?
So I am from Finland. My mom is French, but so grew up in a sort of multinational family back at home in Finland. Decided to go for adventure. Always knew I wanted to travel and live in places, not to just go and visit and tick things off the list, but actually just feel part of the culture. For some reason, I ended up in Bahrain for work. I was working in a Big Five. Do we call them Big Five anymore?
Big Four.
One just moves.
It's a long time since I've been in the corporate world.
No worries.
Yeah, so end up working in Bahrain for one of the big consultancy firms. And then decided, okay, I'm here in Bahrain. I better start learning the lingua, and went to Arabic class and met Ahmed, and here we are. Yeah, it's 14 years.
Mashallah.
15 years since we've known each other, and our wedding anniversary 14 years coming up this
wow.
March.
I don't have as colorful a background as Olivia's, but I think if there was like three things to know about my background, one is that Bahrain and Ireland are where I'm from. Bahrain is where I grew up, and but I think I got a pretty balanced level of exposure to both kind of cultures, Western and Middle Eastern. Growing up, and that formed a huge part of who I am today and how I look at life. And I even though I run a meal kit business with Olivia, which is all about food and cooking, that wasn't really a big part of my upbringing. So my mom was a working mom, very busy, and so was my dad. So just having a loaf of bread and Nutella was sometimes what dinner looked like for me. And I think growing up and past university, work became like such a big essential part of my life. And I think the third thing I would say about myself is that finding that balance has always been one of the biggest challenges for me.
Interesting. You know, that's something I can actually really relate to. I also come from a mixed background. And I think what I love about the fact that both of you do too is it seems that it's kind of what brought you two together. Do you ever wonder or struggle with this idea of how to, I don't know if the right word is converge, but how do you bring all those cultures into one household? Do you still struggle with it? Do your kids struggle with it?
So I think we're both extremely flexible, I would say. And we are both also on, you know, not very caught up with our own way of doing things. So I think we're very, very flexible. So we've just obviously, it's January, so we've just finished Christmas. And I was talking to the kids this morning about it and what they like about the Christmas traditions. And they're asking, so why do we celebrate and open the presents on the 24th? And so I explain, this is how we do it in Finland. And I explain the whole tradition. And so I'm bringing that in because, you know, while Ahmed did celebrate Christmas as well, mum being Irish, but I don't know, I bring that element really strongly to the table of this is how we're going to do Christmas. And now we're talking about Easter coming up, but, you know, we also are going to have Eid. And so it's like, how do we then have Eid celebrations? How do we have Christmas? and so forth. But I think we're just extremely flexible, both of us, and we are creating some traditions of our own as a family as well.
I was doing a bit of digging about you guys, and I read that you both had this drive for entrepreneurship from a super young age. Olivia, you started very, very early in college, and Ahmed, you had a hobby when it came to how you kept up your reading. Talk to me about that, and who really influenced that drive in both your lives?
So I think I'm going to let Ahmed really answer that, because I think Ahmed has the drive. I was just trying to make pocket money. And I only know when you say that like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, I was an entrepreneur from early on. But really, for me, it was, you know, my friends had maybe given pocket money a bit easier, and I always had to work for it. So I had to always come up with ways of, how am I going to go to the cinema? Okay, I'm going to have to, you know, get some pocket money. And so early on, it kind of started with the bakes and everything, catering. But I not necessarily considered it as a drive to be an entrepreneur. It was just like, I need to make ends meet and keep up with what my friends were doing and so forth. So, but Ahmed has a different story, which is quite inspiring as well.
So my relationship with entrepreneurship was definitely cultivated when I was a kid. So I remember going to Ireland for our summer holidays and buying penny sweets from the newsagents around the corner, and filling them into a box and then bringing them back to Bahrain, where I'd sell them to kids who had never seen penny sweets. They had the standard chocolates and sweets and things, but not those kind of quite Western looking sweets, and sell them for like three or four times the price. And I used to feel so good about that. Even if I didn't make enough money to do anything with that money, I just felt good about doing that. And then it moved from sweets to comic books. And then from comic books, it went to going to a flea market in Bahrain, where a school flea market, where I'd set up my Super Nintendo with a 14, I remember a 14-inch screen back then, and have people play against each other, just like an arcade, basically set up an arcade.
Wow.
And I remember getting my math teacher to play five times and therefore like make whatever 500 fills or something like that. I feel so good about that. So for me, I think the inspiration came from my dad. My dad has a truly boom and bust kind of story behind him. So we saw the good times, we saw the bad times behind that. And I think that fed a mostly love, but sometimes love, hate, or love, yeah, struggle with success and relationship with failure. But on a more positive note, I think the highlight for me when I look back at my youth and my relationship with entrepreneurship was when I was 15, writing a book on entrepreneurship, which I still actually happen to have.
Oh, wow.
And it was called Entrepreneurship, How to Start Your Own Business. And in it, I got to interview, and my mom set me up with like three or four kind of well-known entrepreneurs in Bahrain that I interviewed and kind of got to know a little. This was partly for a school paper, but the topic was inherent with how I felt about where my future would go.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, it's interesting because although, yes, as you were saying, Olivia, you may have different ways of how you would define that idea of the drive behind entrepreneurship, both of you kind of had these ideas around how to empower yourself through what it is that you would do to get you somewhere specific, which for me is the foundation of entrepreneurship.
I'd never met an entrepreneur. Like, wow. Yeah, it was not in our family. It was not in our friend, my family's friends. So it was not a path that I thought about because it was not familiar to me at all. So it was, we're very, very working class, and you kind of work and save, and then you go on holiday, and then you start again, work and save, and go on holiday. That's about it. Yeah.
That being said, though, do you notice any hobbies or things that your kids are doing now that you're finding ways to kind of, or you see sparks of that entrepreneurial drive or nature? Because even if it was as simple as just making pocket money, I mean, the creativity and just figuring out how to do that at a young age is something. It's something that a lot of us, you know, privileged people in the Arab world that we know we don't have to necessarily work when we're quite young. We don't gain that experience until we graduate college versus Europe or the States or things like that.
Yeah. So every now and then I look at Aino and Ryan. I'm like, where did these kids come from? But obviously they are, I guess, copying in many ways what we're doing. Even though when we haven't spoken about work, we've only now started like being a little bit more open about talking about work at the dinner table and so forth. But yeah. I think it's been a few years already of entrepreneurship for the kids through our daughter's very arts and crafty. So she's been making all kinds of jewelry and things from young age. She's constantly creating. And so we push them to start with this pocket money thing, because it's something I grew up with very strongly, that you can't always go and, you know, ask your parents to pay for everything, that you need to learn the value of money. So it kind of started like that with lemonade stand and, you know, go and buy the lemonades and make the lemonade. And then they come home with the money from the lemonade and they're so excited. And then we start looking, okay, let's dig out the receipt. How much did we pay for the sugar? How much did we pay for the lemon? And they're like, what the hell? I have to give the money. I'm like, yes, here, you pay, you know, I paid 45. You give me 45, you keep the rest. And the penny starts dropping. I'm like, okay, this is how it's happening. But Ahmed is extremely heavily cultivating the whole entrepreneurial side as well with the kids. So
yeah, it was a family. It was definitely a family objective to get the kids to be more exposed to selling and getting to know not only that it's about the fun part of receiving the money, but all the work that goes behind it. And we tried our best to make it as fun as possible.
I love that.
The advertising, making the posters and putting them in advance. And
getting
everything.
Friends and on the playground to go and sell the...
Nice. Negotiations early. I'm sure you get a lot of that.
I like you, so you get a discount.
Nice. I mean, that's basically how it works in the real world, yeah. Right? I want to go back to Bahrain. You guys in an Arabic class together. What is it that you felt you saw in each other that would make you, or at least made you believe that you were the life partners that you were looking for?
So I'll take this one. So my Arabic is terrible. Mm. And I knew I had a little bit of spare time after Arabic, after work, to take some kind of class. And I thought, maybe I'll meet a girl. And I it's funny because when I was in the class, I looked around and I said, yeah, probably, you know, nobody interesting here. But then Olivia walked in, and I remember her walking in late. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking really, you know, she was really tall, mm-hmm. especially with me sitting down. And I thought, wow. And the class went on one night decided, hey, why don't we go for a drink after class? And we ended up having dinner and drinks as a group. And I think there was a few things that was very obvious with Olivia. It was just the level of energy, positive energy, that I felt when I just talked to her about just random stuff. And I think that was one of the best things, the most notable things about her was just the energy. Mm-hmm. And then everything else just kind of flowed, you know, the cold night where I give my jacket and I could give the details, but that's really how
it was very old fashioned, actually, because then, you took me to the car, and then I think a couple of days later you called me. You'd found my number. I can't remember if I'd given you my number or you found my number on the list, and then call and invite for dinner. And I remember telling you as soon as I sat down for dinner, I'm no salad eating woman, so we're gonna eat.
I love that. What is it about Ahmed that you feel, you know, really kind of reassured you that he was someone that you would potentially want to spend your life with?
I think a couple of things, but most importantly, I was looking for I was looking for somebody who would feel equally sort of passionate about securing a family. Like this was for me. I wasn't anymore. We met a little bit later in life, so I wasn't looking to date or have fun anymore. So I thought, you know, if I'm gonna focus and spend time, I want to spend time with somebody who I think can, you know, bring us together as a family. I can relax because I've always been very independent, been financially free since I left my mom and dad's house at 18. With my 4 cereal bowls and a microwave as a good luck gift. So I thought, you know, I need to have somebody who can also do this seriously so I don't have to carry all the burdens of that on my shoulders. And Ahmed was so driven and ambitious and excited about work and plans of the future and serious. And I needed a bit of serious at that time in my life, and I think we balanced that quite well today. That is a bit more serious, and I let go quite easily. I'm like, yeah. So I'm looking at him sometimes, like, can we skip school today? Can we skip work today and go? And he's like, no, we have to. No. So I'm okay, but then I'll make the plans for after. And so it's it's a good balance.
I want to add something, if I may. So two things really. One is when I met Olivia, I was in a very dark place, and dark in the sense that I had no idea where my life was heading. It was just work. It was just lacking purpose, and I think finding that through a relationship was what actually works for me, I will say that on our second date, Olivia invited me to her house, and she said, and I said, wow, okay, cool. This is working out pretty well. And I walked in and she took me straight to the kitchen, and she said, come to the kitchen. And I looked at the counters, and on the kitchen counters were plates of food, and they were chopped and ready to go, ready to be cooked. And there was this big wok, and I had no idea what to do with this wok. I didn't even know what a wok was, and because my level of skill with regards to cooking was just really student at best. Mm-hmm. And I ended up cooking, and I remember there was beef, there was peppers, ended up being kind of like an Asian stir fry. I cooked the meal. It was edible. You know, and I passed the test, and you know, here we are, married with 2 kids, a business, and a mortgage. So it worked out really, really wow. Quite well, I think. But I think I knew that was when I knew, okay, this person I'm with is actually beyond just somebody that's just a, you know, it's not just a normal relationship. I think where I knew this is where a relationship where it sealed the deal for me, let's say, where I knew, and the turning point is, okay, I don't want to be with anyone else but her, was when we were in Finland a few months later, and we went to the cinema and we watched the movie. And in Finland, the movie was in English, but it had several languages. It had French, it had German, it had Italian, and it had
English. Sure you can share the name of the movie.
Inglourious Basterds.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Right. Wow.
Yeah. So instantly you'll know that there's lots of languages in there, but the subtitling's all in Finnish. Mm. So I speak a bit of French. Obviously, English is not a problem, but the German and the Italian was where, and even the level of French gets quite detailed, so... Olivia translated it to me live while we were watching the movie, and I said, bang, done.
That's the girl.
That's it.
That's the girl.
That was
I love that. I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, you guys gave me the warm and fuzzies just listening to you guys talk about each other, I mean, I'm definitely going to be taking notes, Olivia, about that date idea. I love it. I think it's incredible because, you know, fast forward, a family, a move, and a business later, you guys are here today. And so much of the things that you've talked about, whether it's the energy or the creativity or the balance or even the reliability in you know, one person motivating the other enough to move forward with a plan or a vision. I mean, all of those elements, to an extent, kind of give you the trust that becomes the foundation of building a business. And I know this from my own experience, because while I'm not married, all of those elements in some way, shape, or form were what made me partner with my business partner to build my first business. So I can definitely relate in that context. Fast forward to you guys getting the idea for Hello Chef. I mean, obviously, you've already referenced that cooking is a passion point for you guys. You both love family, which I think is beautiful. But what was the real problem or insight or spark that got you guys to actually move forward with this idea? Because I know as a business, this is really difficult to get off the ground.
Yeah, I think now that I reflect back, one of the books, the first books that you brought me as a gift was How to Start Your Own Restaurant. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
So I obviously always had this idea of wanting to have something to do with food. And the only thing I knew was to have a restaurant. I'd worked in many restaurants. This is what, you know, we used to go to restaurants. So I'm like, I could start my own restaurant, but it's not really about the restaurant or the of giving people like a beautiful meal experience that is important for me. I kept on thinking like there must be something more to food than just a restaurant. It's a business that is extremely competitive and highly difficult to get into and so forth. So we parked this idea for a while. Then we had the kids and we moved to Dubai, and I think here it became. At the time, Ahmed had started his business, so we had a bit of understanding what having our own business could be like. The business was in a state where I could potentially look at leaving my job and starting a business. But I think really being here with the kids and, you know, figuring out how to prepare dinner after a long day at work, after the commute, after going to multiple different supermarkets because one has good vegetables but the other one doesn't have the good meat and the fish is better here, and it just became like a problem that we said we need to solve for our family, because I want to eat good food at home, I want to be able to prepare it, I want the kids to see us prepare food and understand that also is something that we do for the family, and we create this dinner around the table all together where we sit and we share and we talk and we respect the food. It's very different if you order takeout. You don't, maybe somebody else does, but I feel like you don't necessarily respect that food the same way. It's easy to take it and, oh, let's sit and watch a movie, or it comes in these containers and so forth. It rarely would you set up a beautiful table where everybody pitches in and setting up the table. So it's more about that kind of whole idea of having, you know, we wanted to bring this to our family. I wanted to bring this to our family. This is how I grew up. So I think that's where it kind of started. Okay, we need to have something different, something where we teach and help people just create really simple, good dinner at home, because everybody just deserves to sit down and you know, have a chat together with family. And so that's really the why we chose this business, or why we chose the problem that we wanted to solve. And then we saw some examples, but mostly from Nordics and Europe, where we encountered these kinds of business, meal kit businesses. And yeah, that's it.
I love how you talk about it as this, you know, it's so much more about the product itself. And it feels like it's very value-based as a business. And I imagine in terms of a brand, you guys take a lot of those values and you've built it into the company culture itself. What are some of your favorite moments about not just running the business? Because, I mean, mashallah, it's a successful business. But running the business together, because I imagine, you know, there were some struggles, but I'd love to know what have been the highlights. Annie, what are the things that you look back on and think, damn, I'm glad that I got to do that with you?
I think when I look back at the early days were always the most fun, in the sense that they were the most uncertain. I mean, there's still a lot of fun days now, but back then, we had no idea what was going to happen. And to a large extent, I had no idea what I was doing. So there was this element of naivety perhaps innocent naivety that was a good thing in a way. It was, I think if I or if we knew all the answers back then, it wouldn't have been as exciting. So throwing ourselves into that level of uncertainty with, you know, an positive, optimistic view of the world, I think was the best thing that could have happened to us. So for us, figuring out how to sell box one, you know, or box three, and feeling so excited. Right now, if we sell one or two or three boxes, it's, you know, obviously there's a different feeling, right, involved in it. But when you go from zero to one or zero to three or zero to five, there's just this feeling of really being together, packing it in our house. We sold the first 10 boxes or 20 boxes to our friends, right? And we would tell them we're going to pack them in our house. So be prepared.
Just have the cash ready.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cash
and then
business.
And then packing it with ice and then taking it in our car and setting it up there, you know, delivering it there to their house. And people would look at us like, you're actually delivering the box? And we'd be like, yeah, here we are. We delivered the first, I don't know, 50, 60, 100 boxes.
I think when we started to get to 30 boxes, that's when we started
outsourcing that.
Yeah.
Just the process of going through the whole thing together, from organizing to getting to know each other's work habits and work personality, if there's a better word for it, but like basically how we each deal with each other at work and how we communicate and our approach to work and beliefs behind work. It was a side of Olivia that I hadn't seen up until the time that we started the business together. And for sure, it's the side that Olivia hadn't seen. Because up until, you know, 8:30 in the morning or 8 in the morning every day before that, it was, you know, me doing my thing and her doing hers. And then when we're all together, to a certain extent, the relationship changes.
The way that Ahmed talked about the way that you guys built a business, there's a naivete that comes with it. You don't know what you're getting into. So every block that you're building is taking you towards something. That same kind of metaphor applies to the way that you as a couple, you know, come together, build a marriage, build a family. Do you celebrate your wins in the same way you do in your business with the way that you do it when you are building your family, building your home together?
I don't think so. And I think we have had, you know, ups and downs in both in how we build the business and how we build the family over the time. I think with business, it was easier to celebrate because the results are very clear. You know, it's from three books to five to seven to with our family and us, it was always harder. Obviously, with the kids, we're always grateful that they are in good health and there's no need for any interventions and learning at school. But especially when they were little, it was very hard. It was a very tough time for me to kind of be a mom, to be a business owner, to be a business partner, to be a wife, to be a friend, to be everything at the same time. So I think it's a little bit of a bit of a fuzzy, foggy time in my life. I think the first few years of the business, and I don't think I have pictures to prove that we've done birthday celebrations and all kinds of things. But I think it was quite a tough time, and I think the business took in many ways the priority in terms of time spent. I took some really deliberate action to change that later on with the focus on family and the children. Yeah. I kind of let myself go with the business for a few years, for sure.
It's interesting because as difficult as it is to build a business, you know, it's so much more systematic in terms of how you would approach it. There are so many books out there on it and, you know, there are mentors that you can go to. But when it comes to whether it's a marriage or parenthood or even just personal relationships. I mean, I relate to this because when I look at the investment that I made in the relationships with my own parents, my family living in the same house, I mean, there was a disconnect there, if I'm being very, very honest, and that tends to happen. As life partners and business partners, though, I'm very sure that you must have run into challenges. When you're running a business together, it's very easy to move towards resentment and, you know, having a rift in terms of the way that you guys communicate, especially when it comes to your business. And there are different ways to solve that. But what happens when you end up having to go to the same home as that person? I'm wondering, have any of the strategies that you guys have in terms of your communication as a couple helped you solve problems in the business that you've built when you face any sort of challenges?
I'd say absolutely. It was the first few years of us working together, you know, were quite tough. In the sense that we were dealing with two quite strong personalities making decisions about where the business is headed and how to make decisions and how to communicate to each other and to our colleagues who grew in size. There was also the challenge for me. The challenge was getting over my own kind of self-limiting beliefs around how I should be spoken to and how I should be treated. And, you know, there was a lot of ego in there. And there were times where I didn't keep that in check. And what would happen was then I would start building habits that were not productive for our relationship. And if they're not productive for our relationship at home, certainly they're not going to be productive for our relationship at work, and vice versa. If they're not productive for our relationship at work, I'm going to feel it at home, or we're going to feel it at home and experience it at home. So it took me several years to understand that a big part of our good sides of our communication, but also the sides of our communication that were limiting or slowing us down or, you know, hindering our progress, was a big part of it I owned. Mm. And I didn't want to deal with when we first started the business. And I only later figured that out after several years.
So how were you guys able to draw boundaries, though? Because I imagine there were times, especially in the boardroom, where those boundaries must have been crossed. I mean, you can be very, maybe in some cases, overly frank with each other.
Yeah.
So how do you draw those boundaries as partners?
I think we probably didn't do a very good job all the time. But when I look back, I think there's very few moments where we would have been out of order in front of our team members. And I think that comes just from like the innate respect for the other person, knowing that if I was to throw Ahmed under the bus in front of the team members, actually it's not going to be helpful for anybody. So I'm sure there's been moments where it's been a little bit, you know, our colleagues might have been sweating next to us or thinking like, what's going on? But I don't think, you know, we need two hands to count those. So I think most of the time, you know, find a place inside to say, okay, somebody's going to have to flex. Maybe I will flex on this and then we'll deal and we'll fight it at home. Mm-hmm. And that's what we used to do. Then we go home and we'll fight it at home. And so there was a moment, like there was a few years, like we said, quite turbulent years like that. And I think the way I started dealing with it is not knowing necessarily how to deal with it. I started becoming a little bit passive and kind of withdraw mentally from the business and decide that I can't be having these fights every night for the families and for our relationship's sake. So then I became more passive I was still working constantly, but, you know, passive in terms of giving my opinions and so forth and fighting for what I wanted or so forth. And which is also wasn't great in the long run for Ahmed, because we also need to give each other feedback and we need to bounce ideas off of each other. But I lost a bit of confidence. I became a bit just withdrawn. So I thought, okay, I need to preserve some balance and harmony at home. So let me like not fight these fights for now. But I think that was also in the long run. Well, it preserved us, I think, for both of us. But later on, we needed to decide, or we decided together, and I had to look in the mirror and say, do I want to be 100% mentally present and here or not? Mm. And if not, then I'll go and do something else. And if I stay, then I need to start opening up, and we needed to start a more open communication from both sides, but definitely from my side, to be able to say what I feel, you know, what's my truth, how I would like the situation to be, what I need, what I want from Ahmed, and so forth. So took us a while. Mm.
I think a big part of how I felt about our relationship earlier was resolved when we sat down, or at least partially resolved when we just engaged in meta talk, you know, mm-hmm. just talking about talking. So Olivia and I went to did our own kind of retreat. Mm. We just stayed in a hotel, sat down, opened up papers and wrote out goals, and then started really talking about what matters most to us as a couple, and that was really productive.
And
really,
personally, so that I knew exactly what was important for you in your life as a man, and for me, you know, my friends, my family. I don't need Ahmed involved in that. These are things that are for me or my personal growth, and for you. And understanding that fully, I think, really helped.
And then during that conversation, we had for the first time I was able to own up to how I was behaving earlier in the business, where I was quite controlling, very, very fixed-minded about certain things, about or how things needed to be done or how decisions needed to be made. And I think it was a relief for me to say it, to say, listen, I messed up in this area, and this wasn't really healthy for our relationship. And, you know, I like to think it was a relief for you to hear it.
It was a huge relief because then I felt like, okay, I can start being myself and bring my whole self to work, and also knowing that you appreciated my feedback, and I felt heard. It was difficult when you start having other leaders in the business, and you want to make sure that you make them feel very welcome, that you make them feel listened, you make them feel like they're part of the team. So we've always kept very clean. You know, we don't sit next to each other. We haven't sat next to each other ever in the office so far. Now we're starting to think we should, because we probably have lots of things we should be talking about that we haven't talked about over the years, because we've kind of really separated everything. And really, if you don't know, you don't know that we're a married couple. And I think that you know, helped us to a certain extent, but I think that also we went maybe a bit too far from it, and so we needed to bring us again back together and remind ourselves actually we are the founders. So we need both of our personalities, our strengths. Ahmed has immense amounts of strength that he was displaying, but maybe I wasn't able to support him in his strengths properly, because maybe I felt a little bit pushed away, or, you know, I felt a bit shy in bringing my ideas forward after having had years of maybe a little bit of conflict together. So we needed both of the different leadership styles to show up in the office. And I think we're in a really good place at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. The learning I took from this was, if I come into the relationship with my guard way too high or my guard up, I'm the only one that's going to lose, or I am going to lose, or we might lose, even worse, because we're in this together. Mm. And changing that mindset to one of, let's say, an undefended approach to talking, solving problems, an undefended approach to even loving one another, I think that was... That represented a significant shift in our relationship, particularly over the last, I'd say, 12 months, where now I think at home I like to think that we have more balance at home, and at work, I like to think that, well, we both are quite more productive in making decisions and setting the vision for the business.
You know, I don't even believe that friends should be business partners. And I think a lot of people to hear that, you know, or to be asked the question, would you go into business with your significant other? I imagine a lot of people would be against it. But I cannot tell you how much just listening, trying to just not think of what I want to ask next, but just listening to your learnings and your takeaways, and just you interacting with each other is so incredibly profound. Because I think what you have shown me today in this episode is that it is so much deeper than deciding to build something together. It's making a choice to commit to that decision, because it can't have been easy. And I don't imagine that it will be easy in the future. It's hard. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people take for granted how easy it is to stop, to quit, to opt out of, okay, fine, you know what, I'm just going to continue with the house, you continue with the business, and that's how we're going to move forward, because we can't figure out a way to make it worth for us both. So for you to talk about kind of maintaining your own autonomy in this space of home and a family and in a business is incredibly inspiring. Mashallah, I'm looking at you guys and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
How have those values translated to the children that you guys are raising now? Because I definitely sense and observe a level of awareness in the ways that, you know, you're reflective and introspective on yourself and your behaviors and your habits, but you're also very considerate of each other and each other's growth. So how has that translated into how you're raising your kids?
I think it's through example. I don't really know what else to answer. Obviously, Ahmed says we have a better balance at home, but it's still our balance. You know, we're always going to be a different kind of couple. We have it's an unconventional marriage, unconventional couple in many ways. And I think those are the values that come to play, is that sort of respect for the other person, is knowing that you can always ask for help and will brainstorm and support, whether it's a personal issue, a family issue, a work issue. And they see us do that and they pitch in with that. And I think it's these are kind of the values that we bring up. We try to support as well with the, you know, like, you know, owning your own experience and, you know, like the little things that I used to do at home. I always think about them as kind of owning, you know, you have to set the table and clear the table, put things in the dishwasher, put your socks in here. And I should be doing, like, we should be constantly bringing that more for the children so that they understand that, you know, this is a moment in life where they are with us and we help and we take care of them. We'll always be there, but they're going to have to be ready. And so I'm not going to let them go to university and not know, you know, how to pick up. Like, there's not going to be any shockers like that. But so we're really trying to bring that values of you own your own life, and you decide with your own attitude what you're going to do about it. And we sit down with them when things are tough, and we sit down. Yeah, it's a bit tough. It's okay. Let's cry it out. Let's. What can you do? Like, mm-hmm. You can't. And this is the hardest part now that the kids are older. They have bigger problems and friendship problems and, you know, relationships and things like that. And you're sitting there thinking like, oh, I'm going to go to the school and I'm going to rip everybody's ass and fix the problems. And then I'm like, we have to. So we role play and we help them find their own words and things like that to kind of like get and understand their own emotions, why they're feeling like that and how they could be contributing to things. And I think this is actually, I think, hard for kids to understand that they have a play, like a part to play. When somebody acts badly in their, you know, in their terms, is to understand what is the role that I play in this and how can I see this differently. And I think these are the kind of things that we do a lot. We talk about, like, what do you think is happening in that person's home? Like, if they're behaving like that with you, and do you think there's something like that? So you can get angry. We allow people to get angry and upset, and our kids are allowed to be angry and upset. But you know, for a little bit, and then we need to start figuring out like what can I do now for myself to you know, make myself secure, you know, figure out the positioning I'm taking and not be angry at the other person anymore. Like I can be angry in the moment if they do something nasty, but I need to move on. I can't stay. That's somebody else's anger to get rid of. So
yeah, I think there is over time a lot of similarities that I can, or a lot of synergies I can draw in the way in the approach to the philosophy of how we work at home or how we treat our home in terms of values, how we grow raise our children, how we communicate to each other at home, and what happens at work. There's it's almost symbiotic. The better I get at leading myself at work, the better I get at leading myself at home. And vice versa, the better I get at leading myself at home, the better I get at work.
Wow.
So taking ownership, like Olivia said, is one thing. Like really good communication is another. Not just whenever like our daughter or our son are going through those certain parts of their lives where they're almost teenagers now, and there are new challenges that are being brought to them and that require discussion, and it's a really nice time. But not sweeping those aside, just like somebody at work who is upset about something, and not sweeping those aside either. So there's a lot of learnings that
we've messed up many times. So
absolutely.
As one does. I mean, that's what life's about, right? You just have to get back up again. You just have to keep going. Last question. If you were to change anything in your journey so far, in your journey of deciding to partner up together to start this business, in the way that you did it, knowing what you know now, would you change anything?
My first reaction would probably be no. I think I had to go through it to. I think that I had to fight the demons in my own head to be able to become a better person, and I think if I'm more inclined to say no. Yeah, simply because there's just too much learning that went on, and that like really positive learning in retrospect.
Yeah, my sister always tells me, you've become so patient. And I think that is true. I've become more patient. I am still very impatient. But I think the whole journey teaches you that, you know, there's good times and there's bad times, but they all come to an end eventually. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just about, you know, sitting it out. Sometimes you need to take action, and sometimes you just need to hold tight and sit through it, and then observe and continue, because it's going to change.
I love that. If I were to ask you guys, what question would you ask me to kind of close this episode? What would you like me to consider, or what would you want me to consider?
That's a good question.
So I already, we got the chance to connect a little bit on our hike the other day. So I would maybe ask you more about how are you going to preserve yourself? If this is a question to you, right, to Dana. So how are you going to preserve yourself now that you are on your own and you don't have a business partner? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do differently?
That is such a great question. Oh, that's a great question. You know, the beauty in having a business partner is that you feel like you have a level of support in your journey, and you have someone to kind of lean on and talk through things through, whether it's the challenges or the vision or whatever it may be. I think what's empowering, I feel very privileged to have experienced both what I had and what I'm doing right now. I think what's super empowering about how I'm going to be moving forward is that I feel like it gives me the opportunity to become a little bit more decisive and move with more intent and faith in myself. And again, I'm not saying, you know, there's anything wrong with having a partner, but I think there's something very profound in becoming the sole leader on the path that you are walking in life, or in business. It brings with it so many challenges, but I think what's nice about the way I'm moving forward is that I have so many lessons that I'm taking with me. And even when it comes to support, whether it be through a partner or through friends or even through guidance from experts, I know what it is that I would ask for versus where I was before. And I think that's how I am going to kind of preserve my sanity and my energy moving forward, because I know it's not going to be easy. And yeah, I'm excited to kind of see where it takes me. So stay tuned.
I will.
Guys, thank you so much for being here. It was such a pleasure to speak to you both.
Thank you.
And for all those listening, I want to thank you for the privilege of your time. Don't forget to like, follow, or share this episode if you liked it, of course. I hope you found something to consider.